Good evening. Welcome to the Saleri Report. Tonight is Thursday, April 15, 2010. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight, we've got Money and Markets, and as Catherine, and then a special report, the unanswered questions about chemtrails. Our movie is Toxic Skies, which is a fictional account of a government spraying program, and we're also going to touch base on a documentary owning the weather. Well, our theme for today is finding amusement, and that's in honor of the fact that April 15th in the United States is the day individuals pay their income tax or make sure they file their extensions. So today is tax day here in the United States, and that means we're all working to fill out all these tax forms at the same time that all the insiders are rubbing our face in the fact that our taxes are funding an infrastructure which is engineering many of the things that many of us oppose in this world. You know, we talked last week about the fact that Wall Street has announced $140 billion in bonuses, and it's hard to pay your taxes when you realize the money is a straight shot into the back pocket of somebody who certainly doesn't deserve it. The issue is really taxation without representation, and the bailouts and recent legislation has made clear that Americans, certainly the taxpayers, are now are paying taxes without real representation. So it's a profound time, and this issue is one that's is going to come to a head in the next few years as the state and local governments grapple with the challenge of not being able to print money while the federal government can. If you haven't recently, I would really encourage you to sit down and read again the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. They're both amazing documents, but it always helps to refresh yourself about the covenant that we're part of. And that covenant is to me a spiritual and cultural one. It transcends whatever the people running the federal government happen to be doing this week. But I just wanted to read you one of my favorite paragraphs from the Declaration of Independence, because I think on April 15th, 2010, it helps to revisit it. It's the second paragraph. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So just remember that when you get nervous about not responding to the census, these guys work for us. They derive their powers from the consent of the governed. They're not behaving that way, but we need to remind them. Anyway, tax audits that was announced this week on big businesses are declining. The report's up on the blog. But they're increasing individuals and professionals, adding salt to the wounds. Expect that to get worse. That's why you want a good tax preparer. Just to make you feel better, because somebody's always in a worse situation than you. As a result of many years of litigation with the federal government, I have probably the most taxless carry forwards of anybody on this phone call, and that means over the last couple of years, since my tax situation has been unbelievably complicated coming out of that litigation, I have paid many, many multiples of the taxes I owe in tax preparation work. I mean, I would almost be embarrassed to tell you how much I've spent on accountants, lawyers, and the Saleri team working on our taxes, which by next year should be relatively simple. Complexity is the ultimate backdoor control, and I think the ultimate test of whether you can maintain your state of amusement no matter what is if you can deal with this complexity under these circumstances. So bottom line for finding amusement, just because the people running things have lost their minds, it is absolutely essential that you don't lose yours, and that means coming to a place of amusement about managing your relationship with those who have, whether they're on Wall Street or Washington or they live next door. They are everywhere. Anyway, so if you can do that on April 15th, you've accomplished something very important. So congratulations to you on April 15th. You made it through tax day and hopefully have your state of amusement. Money and markets. There's increasing numbers of predictions of catastrophe. It's unbelievable. I don't know about you, but I get a lot of emails. I'm on a lot of listservs with various people in the blogosphere. And everybody's worked their way up into, you know, some prediction of the end of the world. I'm not quite sure where it's coming from, including astrologers. That was the big one today. What's funny is if you look at the people managing the money and responsible for sort of running resources on planet Earth, they don't seem to be taking it very much to heart. They're aggressively running around in the business of buying up as many natural resources as possible. We saw the announcement this week that Mongolia has announced it's issuing $1 billion into the sovereign bond market. So what's interesting is we're watching the older credits get in trouble. So attacks on the quality of the euro or the dollar, but apparently Mongolia can issue $1 billion of bonds. And that's because they're going to be developing natural resources again, people running around for the natural resources. The various, you know, love-hate relationship with China continues, but interestingly enough, ConocoPhillips sold their position in the Canadian oil sands to the China Petroleum for $4.6 billion. So that's a deal close to home. We have a new deal internationally on containing nuclear materials. It'd be interesting to see how it really works in operation. Question is, are the sanctions on Iran next? So stay tuned. Very interesting development that popped up in the Wall Street Journal this week. I call it space pop wars. Pop is my expression for the equity value that comes off of an income generated from something. And I'll talk about pop fights and pop wars where people are fighting to get that income stream and those assets going through their balance sheet because they want to get the pop on it. They want the equity valuation. So space pop wars, there's a squabble between the administration and Congress as to who is going to control in space. Is it going to be NASA and private companies with the administration wanting payloads and astronauts taken up by essentially contracts with private companies? And my prediction here is what we're debating is who will own the rights, the benefits to assets in space, which is the next frontier, absolutely. You know, the next fortunes or the big fortunes over the long term are going to be made in mining, all sorts of space territory and resources. And so the precedent of whether this is going to be funded by government and owned by government for the commons or funded by government and ultimately owned by private corporations, including the intellectual capital of knowing how to do all these things and the engineering that comes out of it is a very, very important. And just to give you a sense of size, if the administration engineered $12 trillion in bailouts into the bankers' pockets, my prediction is the privatization of space funded with tax dollars in a present value valuation is worth a lot more. Prayers for the Polish people. We saw the plane crash with the Polish leadership going down. There's a story there. We have not heard what it is, but it is a sign of the tensions that are occurring. Foreclosure surged. We have projections now of 1 million bank repossessions this year. Let me just give you some of the numbers in Yahoo Finance. This week, a record number of U.S. homes were lost to foreclosure in the first 3 months of the year. Reality tracks at Thursday that the number of U.S. homes taken over by banks jumped 35% the first quarter from a year ago. In addition, households facing foreclosure grew 16% in the same period and 7% from the last 3 months of 2009. We're right on pace to see more than 1 million bank repossessions this year. If this is all true, then it's really no change. What's happening is that finally the situations are sort of turning up in the numbers. But think about the politics of 1 million households losing their home to the banks. Given how much money taxpayers and sort of the public wheel have turned over to the banks, it's an extraordinary political situation. Lots of reports of recovery, although we notice no official announcement of a recession being ended. But in those reports, it's been made very clear that business is left behind. And in fact, Barron's has an article. It's up on the blog. You can find it there. The boom that's left small business behind. This gets back to what I've said before about there being two costs of capital in this country, one engineered for the insiders and another engineered for the outsiders, including small business. Small business is really being put to the test. And what do you think? It's just me that said it. I couldn't believe it. It's so bad Here we have former Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis President William Paul. He's now a scholar in residence at the University of Delaware, saying, quote, "Why should the Fed have had a program to buy commercial paper from large corporations and no program to help small business starve for funds?" Well, what he's pointing out is the same thing, which is literally we're intentionally shutting off credit and all sorts of things to small business and outsiders, and it's not an accident, it's a plan. If you look at how long it's gone on into this new administration, you know, it's clearly intentional. It was when I saw it happen in 1989 and 1990. It's happening again, and it is the reason why small business needs to learn how to circulate equity, particularly equity locally and place-based. We're going to be talking with John Williams of Shadow Stats in the first Solari report next month, and we'll talk about the real numbers on the employment and economy, and that will be a perfect time to do it, particularly if they continue to announce, you know, more spin saying there's a recovery. The food safety bill is under consideration. Again, we have a warning on it. You know, I basically, this time around, I'm getting less subtle. I said Congress tries to destroy small farms or something like that. But it's a big oh no, and if you feel like talking to your legislative representatives, feel free to make a call, and the warning's up on the blog. The Greek sovereign bond crisis is still percolating. We thought we had a deal, but there's lawsuits coming about to try and stop it. And the guy who gets the Oh My Award goes to the head of Euro research at Morgan Stanley, who wrote this week, quote, "To be clear, we neither advocate a Euro breakup, nor is this our main scenario. However, the risk that it happens is far from negligible, and the consequences for financial markets would be very severe. Hence, investors ignore the euro breakup risk at their own peril." He's predicting that the chances that Germany drops from the euro continue to be real. Now, we had a really funny development, and I couldn't resist. I had to put the article up on the blog. There are reports that people at the Vatican and in the senior leadership in the Vatican are saying there's a conspiracy against them, that they're being tortured with the pedophilia stories as a matter of dirty tricks and sort of, you know, warfare. This is a funny thing. I hate to defend the Vatican, but I agree with them. If you look at the history of pedophilia by the bankers and lawyers and the other players attacking them, you know, it really is the pot calling the kettle black. At the same time, the more illumination you bring to these kind of stories, I think it's better in the long run. People need to understand this kind of stuff is going on if you're going to stop it. But there's no doubt about it. We're watching the elites attack each other. It's a little bit, when I was in the Bush administration, somebody said to me, "Wow, it's like being in a rubber lifeboat with people who are attacking each other with razor blades." And we're going to see more of it. So this is going to be a long, hot summer. The squabbling has just begun. Precious metals prices are up. So is the stock market, but not as much as food prices. And politically, food prices are what's going to drive the politics. So stay tuned. Ask Catherine. A lot of questions from subscribers this week. Back again for the third time, Free Lakota Bank. Is it a marketing gimmick or legitimate? The silver coins look great. If you look at our bank intimate section, we say this when we say looking for a bank, but I'll say this about any financial institution. When you consider dealing with any institution, you want to know who owns it, who governs it, who manages it, and how does their money work. When you go to Free Lakota's bank's website, you can't figure any of that out. So I don't know anything about it, but if I can't get that kind of basic information from a website, I don't want to know about it. Severe weather and geological predictions coming. Cliff High said extremely cold weather coming to certain areas where, and volcanoes or hurricanes near the equator, tons of rain where, earthquakes. I don't know. I've read Cliff's latest scenario, and I don't remember him being place specific, but if there's interest, I will try to get him back onto the Solari report sometime in the second or third quarter, and we'll see if we can get a list of where. I keep coming back to the to the belief that you can't find safety. You have to say, you know, where is it in my heart to create safety? You know, now that said, I've got a generator and I built a new roof just to protect myself from the extreme weather. Census Japanese internment 1942, a subscriber points out, census data was used to locate Japanese Americans in 42, and census data was also used by General Sherman to know where to loot in his march to the sea. I hadn't remembered those two examples, but they're good ones, and so I thank you for it. Worker-owned cooperatives, how do you feel about this as a business model? I like it. It's very particular. It works in some places. It particularly works where you have a culture and relationships to support it and make it work. It can't work without very excellent feedback and transparency within the workers and it's high degrees of literacy about the whatever the operation is. So think if you're interested in this one, think a lot about what's going to support it over time and make it feasible. What are the pros and cons? The pro is better internal cooperation and alignment. The con is, and it depends on how you structure it, it's very important if an operation builds up equity that the people who build it up have a way to liquefy it as they age and need to retire. So what you would hate is to create a model where, you know, somebody's in the worker cooperative for 30 years and builds a whole lot of equity. They have no way of building up the personal estate they need either for retirement or to leave to their kids. So you really want to think through the family wealth issues that come with a model that creates a lot of equity. And you want to be careful never to buy into a model. This is why I resist mightily many not-for-profit ideas because, you know, if the bad guys are off building lots and lots of equity and so have very great personal wealth and estates, and we all commit to things that are not for profit, so we never build up equity or never build up estates. That's no good. Is this a model that more businesses should consider? Depends. Depends on the particulars of the business and the situation. We saw in the documentary we watched about Argentina worker cooperatives getting the plants going and really working and making sense. What challenges do worker-owned businesses face within our economic system? Dirty tricks. You want to watch a great documentary, and we'll probably do this on the Solari Report at some time, is American Dream, which is a story of a group that tried to organize a union at the Hormel plant in the late 80s. And you see how the group is sabotaged. A workers' cooperative requires a lot of cooperation between a lot of people, depending on the governance structure. And so it's remarkably easily sabotaged by people who are professional at the kind of covert operations. And so if you can sabotage something like that and then pick up the business cheap on a private equity, you can make a lot of money. So you have to think through, if you're going to do that, who's going to dirty trick you and how can you be not susceptible to that? Will they be easier or harder to sustain in the future? Will workers' co-ops be? I don't really know. It depends on what happens globally. It depends on our culture. Particularly, it depends on our literacy. The more literate we are together and the more we find ways of creating personal responsibility, the more feasible those kinds of models are. And that's why I've promoted the idea of the Solari equity or really Solari venture model. And you can find more about it up on the blog, but it's really, my hope is it's something where communities can start to circulate equity locally and can make something like this. I mean, the way to create more literacy is if we're all investing in local businesses and local businesses can access equity and we can incubate more local businesses in a way that is, you know, we can all participate in the equity, then that starts to be something. There's going to be far more literacy about equity right now. The literacy about equity and sort of seeing the equity opportunities and supporting them and blessing them is not strong in America. Another question. It's official. America Now enforces capital. They link to a story at Zero Hedge about the HIRE Act. The HIRE Act was passed in March. It was about jobs, but the funding came by adding a provision that would cause in 2013 and beyond foreign financial institutions to withhold 30% of their income on U.S. assets. It's an unbelievably complex bill. Ultimately, you can't determine how it's going to work in implementation without the regs, which need to be promulgated. We, because of the interest in the HIRE Act provisions, we published a special report this weekend, or this week, by I asked our attorney to write it, Carolyn Betts, and you can find it up at the blog, HIRE Act provisions. We give a summary of the bill, and we also link to a lot of the other summaries that a variety of different law firms wrote. One of the questions that came with this is, does it not put money in gold money accounts at risk? The answer is no. What it does do is it makes it a lot less likely that gold money would use a U.S. depository or buy gold in the U.S. So as long as gold money is not depositing in the U.S. or buying and selling gold in the U.S., then there's nothing to withhold because there's no income coming from U.S. assets. Now, my bigger concern is not what is in the HIRE Act, but what could happen in the Financial Reform Act that passes this year or next. You know, this is far, far from over in terms of issues related to foreign financial institutions, and there's no doubt that if you look at what they're doing with the HIRE Act, if you look at what they're contemplating for the Financial Reform Act, if you look at what they've already done with the passive foreign investment income provisions or the financial, what's called the FBAR, which we wrote two blog posts about last year, we're looking at layer after layer of complexity and paperwork for somebody who wants to invest in foreign assets and with foreign financial institutions. I once said to somebody, well, you can do things that make money and do the paperwork, or you can just put your money into things with people you don't trust that are, you know, that are probably going to go down. Which do you want? I would rather deal with complexity. Now, let's say that additional provisions pass. My guess is what someone like Gold Money can do, and I should emphasize I haven't spoken with them, they can always split into two companies, one that has U.S. shareholders or investors or in the case of Gold Money, depositors, and those, you know, sort of for everybody else in the world. And then in the U.S., simply give the IRS all the information and data that it wants. As a practical matter, if you look at how much information the federal government has about the banking system and all of our financial situation, I don't, you know, to me that's not going to give them much more information at all. But certainly there's plenty of things that somebody like Gold Money can do. I have no idea what they will do. The HIRE Act is a 2013 issue for them. And again, I don't think it impacts them given that they don't invest in U.S. gold or they don't have a U.S. depository and they can simply refrain from buying and selling gold in the U.S. Census. In discussing the census issue under the beautiful North Carolina sky Sunday, my wife wondered how census information would be any more damaging than that given to the IRS. I speculated about the role of private contractors and their potentially superior technology, but would appreciate your insight. Please keep telling the truth. Great question. First of all, if the average American taxpayer thinks that the IRS data is as accessible for other purposes as it probably is, I think it would make them very nervous. So I see tremendous advantages politically to collecting this information in a different track. However, even if they could create a database just drawing from the IRS, the IRS filings do not necessarily make it clear about they make it clear about where you are depending on whether how you file it. And people may have more than one address. But even assuming if they're geographically impeccable, they may not be thorough about who is in the house with you physically. So I think you get a higher quality of database with the census. I think you you also get a database that's more flexible in terms of use because it's separate from the IRS database. But there's no doubt about it, if they wanted to pull over and the IRS databases, and I assume they can, that will give them a lot. And it part of this comes back to how easy and low cost do you want to make it for them to create a database. If I provide the survey or I provide the census, it's going to be much more impeccable at low cost than if they have to take IRS and other files and discern something that they can make sure is pretty impeccable in terms of place-based data. Because to operationalize a lot of the things you might use these databases for, you really need a very high level of impeccability. So I think it makes a difference. And yet I've been stunned at the number of people I've spoken with in the last month or two since we started publishing the reports on the census who are really afraid of not responding. I mean, they're really saying, if I don't respond, I'm going to be put on a list. And I want to stress again, I think the chances of you getting fined for not responding to the census are probably the same as you getting hit by an asteroid. But I also think in 2000, 28% of the American people did not respond. That's a big number. So even if you are on a list, you're probably on a pretty big list. So that's it for the census. Okay, unanswered questions about chemtrails. What are chemtrails? There's something called contrails. Let's start out with what are contrails. Contrails are the white plume that comes from planes as they travel. It's the condensation from their exhaust, and it quickly evaporates. So you'll see planes fly across the sky. You'll see little white trails, and then that white trail will evaporate. That's a contrail. What started to happen in the late 1990s, it was really 1997, is we started to see planes that would leave long white sort of clouds behind them, plumes behind them, and it didn't evaporate. It would kind of spread and cause the sky to go hazy. Now, there are now reports around the world from U.S., Europe, many countries around the world of these spraying programs going on. Interestingly enough, I keep reading reports that it's not happening in China, and I've spent time in New Zealand and time in Hawaii, and both of those are islands, fairly thin islands with fairly significant winds, and I've never seen any there. And I just called a friend of mine in Hawaii last night. I said, you know, are you still getting, have you seen chemtrails yet? He said, nope, never seen them here. You know, and it wouldn't pay because the winds would just blow them away. But with those exceptions, as far as I can tell, it's pretty common in Europe and the UK and the United States and now reports of countries around the world. Now, here's what's interesting about chemtrails. And let me step back and put it in context. Please, if you haven't watched the Sir James Goldsmith video up at the blog, just go to the blog and do a search for Sir James Goldsmith. And he did an interview in 1994 with Charlie Rose and described what would happen if we instituted the Uruguay Round of GATT trade liberalization in the WTO. And in his presentation, he describes the fact that if we proceed to industrialize agriculture around the world, that we will literally drive into despair, misery, and death 2 to 3 billion people, and that this is absolute madness, all of which I agree with. So, you know, I think he was spot on, and I think time is proving him right, and we're very lucky because the small farmers in Asia have, and lots of farmers in Europe have done a fairly good job of trying to stop these guys in their tracks. So they've clearly slowed it down now. At the same time Goldsmith was warning about the WTO, I was on the domestic side saying, wait a minute, if we do what you're all planning to do, we're going to intentionally engineer the destruction of the middle class in America, and we are going to reduce millions of people to poverty or worse. And I wrote the Dylan Reed story to try and document the fact that we knew if we had a housing bubble, we knew if we stuffed the pension paper, the pensions full of lots of crappy paper. I mean, we knew all of what was happening was intentional. And when the decision was clearly made in 97 and 98 to go forward with the bubble, I was in a state of shock because to me, and I've wrote about this and talked about it last week on the what I wrote in the swine flu, this was going to reduce. We were basically talking about behavior and decisions and actions that was going to significantly reduce population in a very ugly way. And I couldn't fathom that everyone was just going along with it. So now, if you look at what happened to me, if you look at what Sir James Goldsmith was saying, it was as if somebody literally threw a switch and all this kooky stuff started to happen. Whether it's the WTO, whether it's HARP, which we're going to talk about in a second, came out at the same periods, whether it's the spraying programs, same period for genetically modified food, you know, the debt bubbles and the derivatives and all the financial fraud and Enron, all these things were part of one integrated model. The leadership decided to pump and dump the planet, pull a huge amount of money out of America, and shift it abroad in a model of trade liberalization and globalization, which envisioned highly centralized control of the food system, highly centralized control of the capital system. I mean, it's kind of a when I say they've lost their mind, they really lost their mind. You know, Goldsmith called it madness. I agree. But you have lots of things. I wanted to add the fructose and the food happened at the same period, and all these different things that destroy the Constitution, the computer voting, all same period. So all these things start coming out at once, but they're happening in different areas, and people are not, you know, most people are busy. They're raising their kids. They're running their businesses. They don't have time to pay attention. Well, because I found myself in this unique process of, like Jonah, getting spat out by the whale and being in litigation with the federal government, I decided the world had gone nuts. And increasingly, I couldn't understand what was going on in the economy from the statistics. That was before we all discovered John Williams of Shadow Stats, who's just such a blessing. So I decided that I was going to drive around the country and go find and visit a lot of people who were writing and talking, trying to figure out what was going on. But I was just going to ride around and talk to the truckers and see what was happening on the ground. So I began a process in 1998 of just driving my car around. I went to all 50 states over the next 5 years, most of them driving. I put, I don't know, about 400,000 or 500,000 miles on three cars that we had, that Soleri had. Now, the funny thing about, and I wasn't working, I was just trying to pay attention to what was going on. And one of the first things I noticed in, you know, driving thousands of miles a month is I'm watching this spraying. And the amazing thing about this spraying is, particularly then, they weren't planes going anywhere. They were just flying back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. You know, so you drive over the Great Plains and they're driving back and forth and back and forth. And you get these crazy quilt-like patterns. And, you know, it's clearly not a plane that's flying from one place to another. It's just planes crisscrossing and spraying. So, you know, the first thing I think is, well, this is really weird, because instead of the sky being clear and I love the sun, and instead of clear sky and sun, you've got this crazy haze, and it's depressing. Just energetically, it feels horrible. So I started to ask people, well, what's the spraying? And I quickly learned that most people insisted that it was not happening. I'll never forget saying to a lawyer in Washington, who I kind of been stuck with and was not necessarily the brightest light, you know, I tried to say, well, what's the spraying? And he bit my head off. You know, there's no spraying. And I quickly found that it was socially not acceptable. It was socially unacceptable to discuss whatever was going on in the sky. You weren't allowed to talk about it, you know, or people refused to talk about it. And I'll never forget coming to Hickory Valley, and I met someone who living down the road, and they were interested in going out and collecting wildflowers with me. And she just said one day, you know, I don't feel like going out and collecting wildflowers today because they're spraying and it makes me sick. And I almost fell off my chair because here was somebody who just talked about it, you know, as it was a matter of fact instead of, you know, pretending not to know about it. So to me, the thing I most noticed about chemtrails from the beginning was the sort of mass, you know, covenant we had to deny and pretend that this really wasn't happening. Now, occasionally you'd get, and you'll see this on the internet, I put up one this week, it was kind of charming. Occasionally you'd see weathermen, you know, because there's a complete blackout on the media as far as I could tell. There was some stuff on the internet, but a blackout on the media. You'd get these weathermen who'd say, well, the military is spraying and, you know, various reasons for it. And so occasionally you'd have weathermen talk about the military spraying, but that was it. But it seemed to be like all these other things I was dealing with, $4 trillion going missing from the federal government, the housing bubble just with massive mortgage fraud, Enron, and everybody's running around pretending it's not happening. So I said, okay, well, at that time, I kind of made a command decision about two things. One is I decided I was gonna continue with the litigation. I was not going to run away. And, you know, I was not going to take my money and fly to New Zealand and never come back. But I was going to kind of see it through and get to the bottom of it and do the right thing. And the second thing was I made a decision that I was committed to having an honest map. In other words, I wanted to understand what was really going on, and I wasn't going to pretend that things weren't happening. And I discovered that all these different groups, whether they were north, south, east, west, right, left, red, blue, all these groups all had an agreement that they weren't going to talk about certain things. Now, what they wouldn't talk about and what was not socially acceptable was different group to group, you know, but everybody had what I call their material omission. And a material omission, if you're a securities person, it's a very important part of, or used to be a very important part of the securities law, says that you can't ask somebody to make an investment without making sure your disclosure is complete. You can't omit any piece of information. And so when and in fact, if you go to my blog and do a search for material omission, you'll get two blog posts. I did one about David Corton, who is a typical example of someone who writes stuff that most people find wonderful, but he's then guilty of some of the most extraordinary material omissions. And I find that to be terribly unethical because, you know, if in permaculture you say the problem is the opportunity, well, you can't get to the opportunity unless you can get an honest diagnosis of what in the world is going on, including the fact that we don't know what is going on. I mean, to deal with uncertainty, you've got to admit that something's happening, you don't know it, and that's the beginning of collecting information to try and figure out what is happening. My father was a surgeon, and it's a little bit like asking your surgeon to operate and say, but, you know, I don't want you to see this X-ray, and I don't want you to see this MRI, so we're going to, I don't want you to see what's in that, so we're going to leave that off the table, but I want you to go ahead and diagnose me and operate. Even though you're not allowed to see that. Well, you know, that's something you would never do. And but we're asking ourselves to make major investments of time and money in our lives, and we're living with material omissions on the part of the government, the media, and everyone else. And so we can't stop the government, we can't stop the corporate media from engaging in material omissions, but we can stop each other from engaging in it, and because I think it's really important. If somebody's spraying overhead, I think it's really important that we feel free to discuss it and say, you know, what is that and what is that about, and how come the clear skies, the clear blue skies that I love, are sort of going away? Now, the three points to this report about about the unanswered questions of chemtrails that I want to make. And I want to tell you those up front and not in the summary. The first is that the overt and covert world are bumping into each other, and chemtrails is the perfect example of where they bump into each other, an example of how that's happening. And I want to read to you from a new book I'm reading called Blank Spots, The Dark Geography of the Pentagon's Secret World by Trevor Paglen. And this is right in the beginning. He says, "But you don't have to scour the Earth's corners to find the blank spots on maps characterizing the secret world. The vast majority of the secret world is not found in the remote corners of the Earth, but it is instead startlingly close to home. And its scale is tremendous." I want to say that again. Its scale is tremendous. "Approximately 4 million people in the United States hold security clearances to work on classified projects in the black world. By way of contrast, the federal government employs approximately 1 million civilians in the white world." I call that the overt world. "The black world then represents millions of jobs. It also represents accumulated knowledge and history. A 2004 study by Peter Gallison at Harvard University concluded that in terms of information, the classified universe, as it is sometimes called, is certainly not smaller and very probably much larger than this unclassified one. Using data from 2001, Gallison noted that there were 33 million classification actions. Assuming that each action represented on average 10 pages, he deduced that 330 million pages were classified that year. About 80 million were declassified, leaving a net gain of about 250 million classified pages in secret archives. Gallison found that if you measure accumulated human knowledge by number of pages, the amount of classified knowledge produced in a single year is about five times as great as the amount of knowledge going into the world's great repositories of public knowledge, and the classified universe continues to expand." Okay, so what's been happening? I've talked about, if you read the Dylan Reed story, I go through it, and I went through it in many of the articles I've written about the black budget. In 1947 and 1949, we created a mechanism to allow vast amounts of money to be spent secretly on classified things. And when we did that, we started to create this sort of secret parallel universe in our own country, and it has grown and grown and grown. And as the book describes, if you look at it in terms of number of people, if you look in terms of knowledge, and I would add, if you look at it in terms of money, it's completely expanding at a much more rapid rate than the overt non-classified world. But what's happening is we're starting to see these worlds bump into each other. I've had the opportunity in my life to go back and forth between the overt and the covert world, and it's so strange because in the covert world, you're not allowed to talk about a lot of things in the overt world and vice versa. The strangest thing is to be in the overt world and to mention something about the covert world, and people look at you like you're mad because they think that only happens in, you know, in the movies. It doesn't really happen in real life. So we've developed these two parallel universes, and they're starting to bump into each other, and it remains to be seen what is going to happen. But I think it's very important for you and your family to understand that this classified world exists. It is commanding bigger and bigger portions of the economy, and it is essentially ruling the roost in political power. And chemtrails is an example of where, I mean, we literally have a massive global spraying program, but everybody's walking around pretending it's not really happening and not talking about it. Okay, so that's point number one, is that the overt and covert worlds are bumping into each other, and that process has only just begun. Number two, get radical about protecting and building up your health and the health of your family. Whatever is being sprayed, clearly some of it is dangerous to our health and the health of our family, and it's part of a whole gamut of what I would call environmental pollution. And I can't really tell you that your risk from the spraying is greater than the risk of what's happening down the road at a plant that's polluting your water table, or, you know, what we're seeing along the East Coast is this gas fracking that is thought to be so dangerous to the water program. Or, you know, so I can't say which environmental pollution is greater. But there is no doubt about it that we are functioning in a world where we have a $1 trillion infrastructure of polluters, including ourselves, and sprayers, and many of them could not care less about you or me. And so we really have to get radical about our health. There are risks that we can control and risks we don't control. Chemtrails is a risk we don't control. If you look at the statistics, whether it's junk food or drunk driving, the ones that we do control, still continue to be much greater. And if anything, because the ones we don't control appear to be rising, it's a good time to get radical about doing whatever you can with the risks that you do control. And frankly, if you have the means, you have the ability to move to a less populated area. One of the reasons I live in Hickory Valley was the spring was later here, just not that many people. And, or if you have the wherewithal to check out New Zealand or Hawaii or other islands with trade winds where it may not be as may not exist or may not be significant, then you can consider it. And finally, you can take action. My hero this week is one of the people I most love in this world, Foster Gamble, a marvelous businessman scientist from California, from Santa Cruz, who is making a wonderful documentary called Thrive that you're going to hear more about this year or next. And he and his wonderful wife Kimberly stopped work on their documentary to help organize the effort in 2008 to stop the light brown moss spraying in California. It's an extraordinary story of grassroots organizing that's very effective. It's got the spraying stop. California's trying to start it again. They never quit. They're funded with tax dollars. But it's a wonderful example that shows what can happen when there's open discussion. And that's why I think the one thing we can all do, in addition to, prayer and meditation about all of this, is to start talking about, what is this? What is all this stuff going on over our head and what's going on? And do it not in a scary way. And I would say we're coming into a campaign, and campaign is always a wonderful time. It's the perfect time to ask your congressman, what's the spraying program? What are they spraying? The way to do it is with laughter. What we need is more comic strips and jokes about chemtrails, because we need to demystify this, and part of it is to stop it from being scary and get it to be funny. Okay, so what is the goal of the spraying program? Well, we don't know. We have no idea, and it's interesting. Off and on, I've tried to dip in and really read and learn a lot about chemtrails, and it's one of those things where I walk away shaking my head and saying, well, I guess I have to embrace uncertainty. I just don't know. And part of it is when you don't have a governmental process and that kind of funding to create and affirm evidence, or you don't have a court or legal process, it's very, things get very wiggly and it's very hard. But let's go through some of the theories. There are many, many theories, and I'm not going to review anywhere near all of them. I'm going to review the ones where I think there's some logic to them, or there's some evidence, or they make sense, not so much given what I know about chemtrails, which is little, but given what I know about how the guys who run the planet operate. Number one is weather modification. One of the documentaries I posted on the blog is a very interesting documentary called Owning the Weather that covers the sort of efforts by a variety of interested parties to keep weather control alive in the overt world. We had a period, and it's really after the Vietnam War, where weather control efforts went black, and they stayed black. And my guess is there's been a fantastic investment in weather control and weather control technology in the black world. But the Owning the Weather doesn't cover it. It sort of covers what's been kept alive by a variety of sort of entrepreneurial efforts and discussion by academics in the overt world. And it's very useful to thinking through some of the reasons why people would find it attractive to do weather modification, and why anybody who understands natural systems might think, on the other hand, that's completely nuts. But it does work through some of the issues, and I think it's interesting. Another book I would recommend is Michelle Chanadovsky's book, The Globalization of Poverty. And it was the first book that got me to seriously consider the fact that warfare is now being conducted through weather control, and it describes patterns of drought and other things in North Korea that I think are really interesting and worth considering. Michelle's global research website has had some interesting things on weather warfare and weather control. Again, a lot of it in the speculative area, but I think it's worth speculating about. So weather modification is theory number one. Is this possible? My answer is yes. The second, which is even harder to get information about, is what I would call manipulate the electromagnetic field. And some of the theories have this being done in connection with HARP. HARP is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project or program. It's jointly funded by the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Navy, the University of Alaska, and the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA. And its sort of official mission is to analyze the ionosphere. It's clear to many people that they're manipulating the ionosphere and doing so in a way that could have a variety of impacts. It was started, you know, during this same period in the early 90s. It was established in 1993, so this same time period that I talked about with Sir James Goldsmith and myself. And the probably the best website or sort of describer of the HARP project is Nick Beglich, whose father was a congressman in Alaska. His website is Earth Pulse, and I hope to get him on the Soleri Report at some point. But he's written a great deal about HARP and the manipulation of the ionosphere and the manipulation of the atmosphere. Now, if you look at the various theories about manipulating the electromagnetic field, they include weaponry. If you can manipulate the electromagnetic field, you can have a dramatic impact on all sorts of people's ability to navigate from an airplane to birds, bees, humans. They include surveillance, and they include mind control, because you're talking about literally changing the wave patterns with which we resonate. And if you're as interested as I am in the field and the concept of shared intelligence and the ability of different animals and humans to communicate. So, for example, the birds navigate through the electromagnetic field, and they navigate not just with respect to the Earth and where they're going, but in formation with each other. So when you manipulate the electromagnetic field, in theory, you impact that process, and what I believe in theory, you could even impact how people literally resonate with each other. So it's to me the sort of all the theories about or the concerns about what this is doing to the electromagnetic field, good or bad, is if there's any one I read and study that is of most concern to me, it's this. Now, could these be possible? Absolutely. If the military-industrial complex could make a weapon that would manipulate the electromagnetic field, that weapon would be unbelievably powerful. That weapon could keep the dollar up forever. So would they do it if they could? I'm sure they would. Can they do it? I don't know. It's also possible they're trying. Could it relate to chemtrails? Yes, because chemtrails, if they include the sort of the salts and the heavy metals and the particulates, the nanoparticulates that they are said to, then in theory you're literally creating a web within the field that could help you manipulate it, or so the theory goes. Okay, so theory number three is create or prevent global warming. One theory says we're in danger of global warming, And therefore, if we spray, we create a haze that protects the Earth from the sun. And another theory says, no, if anything, this is warming up the Earth. So we're, in fact, creating global warming. But, you know, which one is right? I have no idea. One of the greatest concerns I have talking about global warming and the solutions to it or any environmental issues is I don't want to consider what's happening to the planet without considering what HAARP and these spraying programs are doing. To me, they're a critical part of the mix, and if we're going to understand what's really going on, then I need to hear an explanation. So when I watch somebody's video like Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth, to me it's all just yah-yah because, you know, it's leaving out. It's a little bit, again, like asking your surgeon to contemplate a diagnosis without being allowed to look at the MRI or the X-rays. A fourth theory is compromised immune system's lower vibrational level. That goes along with the importance of the sun to our health and vitality, and you're cutting humans off from the source of their energy. You weaken the population, it's easier to control them, prevent them from resonating with each other. Is this possible? Yes, it absolutely is. One thing to consider is it's very rare. If you look at the amount of money being spent and the operational commitment to do this spraying program, it's a great deal of money. It's a huge operation. And in my experience, the people around the planet never do something like this without a multivariate goal. In other words, while you're up there doing one thing, you might as well be up there doing something else. You know, would they spray people just to weaken them and make it easier to control them politically? Absolutely. I can't stress to you enough how afraid, in my experience, the top people are of the population and of people. And part of it is they assume that people will respond to them the way they would respond to them if they were in our shoes, knowing what they know about what they've done. So they're unbelievably afraid of humans. They're also very afraid. I'll never forget Stuart Brand, who wrote the Whole Earth Catalog, was a founder of Global Business Network, and my firm was a member of Global Business Network for a while. And I remember talking to him when I first started to read and study the fields, how excited I was, and he looked at me and he said, you have to understand the, and they were working for the CIA at that time, was one of their big clients. He said, they've done a lot of research on what's happening with the internet, and what they've discovered is that a group of humans can build a consensus and then lock into a point of view, and they're like 20 mules. They won't change once you get that lock, and they're terrified about this ability to lock, and they're very interested in finding ways of preventing that from happen. And every time I listen to the various theories about, you know, weakening the immune systems and sort of dumbing down, I realize, I hear Stuart telling me that story, and for some reason it makes me nervous. Okay, then theory number five is other geophysical engineering. If you watch Owning the Weather, you'll see some of the material on geophysical engineering. I put some also as a link to the blogs, and there's a variety of different things that this can get into. Again, is it possible? Yes. That doesn't mean it's part of the equation. So which of these is it? I have absolutely no idea. What I will tell you is there's one thing I know about the spraying program. It's really happening. And I know that there's a lot in it that is causing real health problems. The third thing I know about it is that it's a symptom of a very serious political problem that needs to be addressed, as are all these other things we've talked about, whether it's the missing money or the bailouts or computer voting or Enron or whatever. They're all symptoms, but they're not the problem. The problem is you have a group of people governing resources, doing things that affect our life way outside of the Constitution and the legal framework that exists. And it's happening. They're doing it. It's not subject to transparency. It's not subject to disclosure. And we're not having an honest conversation about it. We need to feel free to talk about it, and we're not. And so it is a symptom of a serious political problem, and that political problem needs us to start having a conversation about it. Who in the world is doing this? Why are they doing this? And how do we get a change? Now, one of the things that happens to me when I start to talk to people about chemtrails is they say, oh, no, 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 that can't happen here. If you look at the history of U.S. secret human experimentation, it's very significant. You know, I hate to say this, but the people around the planet are people who practice and believe in slavery. Slavery is more common and bigger today than it ever was during the slave trade in the 1700s, so in the 1800s. So this is, you know, these people don't, you know, this will not be the first time we've been experimented on secretly. Or this, you know, they've done something that dramatically impacts our health and haven't disclosed it. So, and you have to remember that we're, in America, we're used to enormous amount of privileges, and the conditions which supported that privileges no longer exist. 20 years ago, they needed the U.S. consumer. We're moving into a world, it's what The Economist calls rebalancing, I talked about it last week, where they don't need the U.S. consumer. We don't need the U.S. Workforce or the elites don't. They don't need, you know, with computer voting, they don't need the voter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so could this happen? Yes, it could happen, and that's why it needs to be talked about and dealt with. The health issues are the place to focus when you think about chemtrails, because you want to make sure that you protect yourself against the possible health fallout. We have indications of fungus being in the spray, of heavy metals, particularly aluminum, titanium, barium. Every year I get a 24-hour urine test to test for heavy metals, and I've been detoxing heavy metals. I wanted you to watch the Toxic Skies movie. It's very interesting. It shows a plague that catches on as bubonic plague, and the normal ways they have to stop it won't work because people's immune systems have been so compromised with heavy metals. And there's a wonderful comment in it where the doctor says, you know, it takes a long time to get the heavy metals out, so we don't have time to stop the plague. That's true, and whether for heavy metals can be caused by lots of different kinds of environmental pollution, not just spraying. So I wanted you to watch it because it underscores the importance of paying attention to what your heavy metal levels are, your toxicity is building up your immune system. The best person I found to talk about the health impact of chemtrails is Dr. Gwen Scott. I'm hoping to have her on the Soleri Report later this year. If you go onto the internet, and there's a whole series of different videos of her on YouTube. She also has a DVD called Natural Medicine. It doesn't get into chemtrails specifically, but it's very good. We also did an interview with Laura Thompson, Dr. Laura Thompson, my nutritionist, on swine flu, where she talks about what you can do to build your immune system up and to detox. And you'll, you know, in discussion of many different stresses in the environment, it comes down to the same thing, build up your immune system and detox. And I would really encourage you to go back into the archives and listen to that. It's a great one. And in fact, Dr. Thompson has offered for anyone in the Soleri Report who wants to do a consultation with her, if you tell her you're a Soleri Report subscriber and heard me say this offer, she'll give you a $50 discount on the first consult. But I would really encourage you, whether you use her or anyone else, get a good naturopath, a good nutritionist who's knowledgeable about environmental pollution, and start to make sure that you and your family are testing. One of the dangers of this is, you know, normally it takes decades and decades for these kinds of things to build up, but what we're seeing is children who are building up the kind of, as a result of this kind of pollution, building up heavy metals much faster. So, you know, get your family checked, and if there's any indication that you need to be detoxing, you need to do anything to build your immune system up, please do. I said it. Probably the thing that scares me the most about chemtrails is my concern about manipulating the electromagnetic field, because it's so very important to our health and our power as human beings, particularly the power of our imagination and our mind. And I don't begin to understand enough of what HAARP and chemtrails may or may not do, or how the electromagnetic field works. But I do think it's important. It's one of the areas I keep reaching out and trying to learn more. You'll see reports on the Internet of people talking about Oregon energy, which was a term sort of developed by Wilhelm Reich, which I think is a very important concept. If you look at how much effort was put into stopping Reich and suppressing his work, I think it's important. And people talking about how you can reverse the impact of chemtrails, I have no idea if any of it's true or not. So I just go back to the power of prayer, because that's what's always worked for me, and that's what I have available, particularly in a world where you have to keep saying, you don't know, I don't know, I don't understand. A couple of great subscriber questions. I'd like to know more about chemtrails. Well, that's why we did the report. We hope you found this helpful. I live in Santa Barbara, California, and we're deluged with chemtrails here, and it's a serious health hazard affecting many here. Another one, I don't buy the chemtrails conspiracy theory. To publicly consider it makes it hard to take your site seriously. It's interesting, you get yapped at a lot when you start to talk about things which are sort of not socially acceptable to talk about, and I'm committed to talking about them, because we're never going to find the opportunity unless we are free to talk about the problem, and a lot of these things are symptoms of the problem, or, you know, as I said, they lead you back to who's in charge and why are they doing this, but you can't. I was talking today with David Ligdy about C.S. Lewis's book, The Screwtape Letters, in which the devil is writing his instructions to his agent on earth and points out again and again that his greatest power is the fact that they've persuaded people he doesn't exist. And we have this challenge of having persuaded ourselves that some of this stuff doesn't exist. And of course, you know, it does, and I know it does, because I've driven all over the country and I see this stuff almost every day. It's really happening. One subscriber writes in, please address something in your chemtrails that has baffled me. Aren't the same people who are spraying these chemicals breathing the same air? Or how have they managed to create a separate piece of air so that they won't be contaminated? This is a great question and is the great mystery. A couple comments in this vein, although, I don't know the answer to this question, is none of the people that you are watching that you think have real power, from the president to the Congress, none of them have real power. I mean, it is theoretically possible for something like this to be going on and have significant health impacts, literally to be, you know, impacting all the people that you are running the government or running business and are running Wall Street, and it's impacting them and their families too. Now, it's interesting, in the movie The Toxic Sky, we see an example, or we see a story where the people doing the spraying have created anecdotes for themselves. Could that also be true? I have no way of knowing. There's no doubt about it, this spray is spraying on everyone, and it's hard to believe, if you look what is in it, that it's not impacting everybody beneath it, which sort of makes you wonder if the justification or the reason for it is not to also protect people, because you'll get these situations in national security decisions where if you do it, you have negative health effects, but if you don't do it, you're going to have more people dying. So I think it's a very important question. I don't know the answer. Finally, another question. Chemtrails for the last month, they have chemtrailed almost daily in San Diego. Are my 5 kids safe? No one ever covers it. What is in those chemtrails? Why are they doing it? What's the real story? My strong recommendation for you is start watching Dr. Gwen Scott and looking at what you can do for your family to track, how you're, if you are building up heavy metals, and to do everything you can to take health precautions. And again, if you feel comfortable, let's start talking in the campaign or to people about what in the world is going on in the skies and what we should do about it. So, that's it. The unanswered questions about chemtrails. The spraying is happening. We don't know why. We don't know who's doing it, but it really is happening. If you get the questions about chemtrails answered, you start to answer many other questions about many other symptoms of the real problems before us, and the fact that we have a covert economy that is growing and growing and becoming more and more invasive to our lives, and the confrontation between the two economies is it's certainly headed for a confrontation of some kind. Okay, so next week, Catherine Albrecht doing spy chips. She's the leading expert on the side of freedom for RFID chips, and a very important issue and not unconnected to chemtrails or some of the things we've been talking about today. She has a wonderful book, Spy Chips. I encourage you to read it. I'll post a link up on the blog to her website. But that's a very good book and one worth reading. May 6th, John Williams of Shadow Stats. What are the hard statistics about what's going on in the economy, inflation, employment? That's going to be a great one. May 13th, the Precious Metals Market Report. May 20th, Clifford Carnicom, one of the observers who's done the most to track more on chemtrails, is going to come back, and we're going to dive more deeply into some of the theories on what chemtrails are. If you have questions, I would encourage you to send them to us, and we can organize and dig deeper on the theories of greatest interest to you. And then on June 3rd, a huge and very happy success story, Crosby Mint Farm. If you've been following them on the blog, they were a wonderful farm, make a wonderful product, mint oil and other mint products, forced into foreclosure, forced into auction, and the Crosbys got the farm back. It's a great success story. And speaking about the power of prayer, a great success story for the power of prayer. So until then, you're in our prayers. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.